Good evening, and welcome to After the Hill, Preparing for Life After Lewis and Clark College. I'm here, my name is Minda Hyman, and I'm here with Brian Federico and our special guest, Maren Corbley, and we're glad you're joining us tonight, either in live time or downloading us to listen to us. As always, if you are trying to reach us to ask a question, you can IM chat with us on AIM at Minda Hyman, MindaHeyman. And we're really excited here to have an exciting show. We're going to be talking about networking tonight.
Oh, yeah.
So welcome, Brian, and welcome, Maren.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Before we get talking tonight, I wanted to give a couple quick announcements. As I've been talking the last couple weeks, we've started a new Alumni Career Corps, and that group is up and running, and I'm really excited to report that we have an updated list of who is going to be on campus and which nights. For those of you who don't know, the Alumni Career Corps is a group of alums who have volunteered to work with students to answer questions about job searching, networking, interviewing, and also to just talk about their experiences after Lewis and Clark College. Next week, on Monday, March 14th, we have Megan Callahan Grant, who was a psychology major, and her background is in environmental, nonprofit organizational management, science, and conservation. And she is currently a marine habitat specialist for NOAA Fisheries Restoration Center. So kind of an exciting organization, and we're excited to have her. Also on Tuesday, March 22nd, Larissa Beck, who is a SOAN major, and her expertise, listen to this one, is in gourmet food service, education, and community organizing, and she's currently a seventh grade teacher. And then also on that same week, Thursday, March 24th, Richard Moore, who is a English literature major, and he is an audio engineer, musician, and voice actor, composer, sound designer, as well as carpenter. So really some interesting alums that we're bringing to campus in the next couple weeks. You can go directly to learn more about those at lclark.edu/college/offices/alumni/core. C-O-R-P-S. And you can get a complete list of everyone who is going to be on campus. So I'm really excited about that. Also, please remember, we have evening hours in our office on Monday through Thursday from 5 till 8. You can meet with our part-time career counselor, Nina Oaken. We're really excited about that. And we have a couple of events that are coming up in the near future, including Saturday in service with Friendly House. That's this Saturday. We have Spring into Action sign-up is going on, and we have the Summer Internship Awards that are coming up. And Maren, you just came from the Peace Corps information session. How was that?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I got so caught up in all the details that were, it was very detailed, and got to hear a lot about the Peace Corps and all of the opportunities and a lot of the benefits of joining the Corps.
Great. And just so everyone knows, we have jumped up on the Peace Corps. One of the exciting things about the Peace Corps this year is that we were always high in terms of number of students who go into the Peace Corps from Lewis and Clark. But this year, we were named, I believe it was the third, number three in terms of schools they recruit from in terms of small liberal arts colleges, which was a jump. So usually we're in the top 10, but now we're in the top 5. So pretty darn exciting. So I'm glad that went well. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about networking. And Maren has very graciously offered to be our guest and to answer questions and talk about her experience. Brian, I'm wondering if you can talk about what your experience is with networking and, you know, if you have any stories that might be helpful to illustrate the point of how important networking is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I graduated from Lewis and Clark in 2005. And since then, I've had three different jobs. And all of those jobs I got because of someone that I knew. I like to take some credit and think that it's because I have some skills that I offer organizations, but I was only, I think, really seriously considered because I had someone on the inside who was saying to the hiring manager that I should be a serious consideration. And that, to me, is sort of the most critical lesson that I learned in networking, is that when you put yourself out there and you make some real connections with people, it pays off in a big way. And I'm really grateful for those people who advocated for me. And I only knew them because we just happened to network together. And it wasn't, I think, sort of in the traditional kind of schmoozy sense that we networked, but they were just people who I connected with personally and professionally. And it paid off for in each of those cases, I think, that it really was worthwhile. I've done, you know, I certainly have done a lot of, I think, more traditional kinds of networking when you think about what networking looks like, where you exchange some business cards and you're at a cocktail party or you're, you know, that kind of thing. But the networking that I found proved to be much more useful was the networking that sort of happens much more casually, that, you know, one of the folks who helped get me my current job, I actually met because we took the shuttle together to Lewis and Clark.
So you never know how someone's going to help you.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that that's, you know, it was a curious lesson that I learned, that networking happens everywhere, all the time. And not that that means you have to be hyper-vigilant, but I think it does mean you have to be aware that you're always presenting yourself and you never really know who you're presenting yourself to. And interesting connections can be made and interesting results can come from those connections. And so networking is a much more organic process than I think we originally think that it is.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I had a former director that I used to work for, and he used to say something that I stole from him because I think it's brilliant. He talks about a job search process as people think of it as an application process rather than as a communication process. And an application process is very one directional. You turn an application, you wait for a response, you do or don't hear something, and you know, do or don't get an interview. But really what he means by the communication process is you're still applying through the front door, but the application is only part of the interviewing process, or part of the application process. There's also connecting with an organization, connecting with people in that organization, so you can learn about the culture and get a sense of it, learn about an industry and get to know who the players are in that industry. And I think it's such a brilliant thing to think about, because I think networking can be a little scary for people. So before we sort of jump deeper into that, that's a great, great story. And I appreciate that, Brian. I would like to introduce our guest tonight, Maren, and to hear a little bit about her. So Maren is, I'm going to start just by saying, Maren, I met a few years ago when she was in a transition, actually. And I'm really excited to have you here. And she's a senior. And so I'm going to let her tell us a little bit about her story. So thank you. Welcome. And tell our audience, our viewing audience, a little bit about yourself and where you are, you know, how your path is starting and where you think it's leading right now.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a senior, and so that's definitely meaning that my focus is on life after the hill. And I am a psychology major and have a lot of interest in psychology specifically, but my heart really lies in education. So I've been doing my best to volunteer in programs like the Multnomah County Outdoor School, just to put a plug in there for them, which is a great organization that works with sixth graders in a residential environment and has volunteer and employment opportunities. And also volunteering in Portland Public Schools and try and get that background there to help me gain some skills and then also some interest as to where I want to go afterwards. So actually tomorrow is my Teach for America final interview. And I'm still looking at other options. I'm trying to create a little handbag to grab from. So I'm looking at Peace Corps. I'm looking at local jobs here. I'm also interested in wilderness therapy and outdoors education. So I've been looking at jobs with NOLS, the National Outdoor Leadership School. And I'm just trying to expand my horizons so that I'll be happy with what I end up with once I graduate. And of course, focusing on my studies and all that.
Of course. That's sort of a given, right? Well, I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about how we talked last week. Claire Cummings was here last week, who was wonderful. We love her.
My birthday twin, actually.
Oh, really? Oh. Okay, good to know. Good to know. I have a couple birthday twins as well. And we were talking about how she got to discover her passion. So you're talking about, you know, being a psychology major and being passionate about education. Where did that passion for education stem for you?
So I am lucky enough to have grown up in Portland. So that really the link to the education world was started in outdoor school. I volunteered because it was a cool thing to do make friends and be out in the woods, and I really liked working with kids, and I really just felt like I was sort of coming alive doing it, quote, who is that, Howard Thurman, coming alive. And so I felt like that was the thing that I needed to do because it was so invigorating.
It sounds like it's very hands-on and tactile, too. Now, you took an interesting path because you took some time to actually work full-time with outdoor school. Talk a little bit about that for a minute.
Yeah, so as a high schooler, I was able to volunteer with the program 1 week each semester and work with just one group of a few classes of kids, which was really great, and I could feel that effect. But I wanted to know what it was like to be a mentor to those high schoolers, and I decided that that was always something that I wanted to do, and I was ready for some adventure after my sophomore year. And so I planned ahead, and so I'm still graduating on time, but took some summer courses and took my fall semester off in 2009, and was able to work out there in the pouring rain amidst swine flu and all sorts of adversity, and was able to make some really good friends, have fun at my job, and spend every day on the trails and really working directly with students in that rain and in the muck and just loving every second of
it. I was going to say, so you know you love education when you're in that kind of environment and you're still happy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great, great. And, you know, you said you're looking at Teach for America. You have your interview tomorrow. How are you feeling for that? Sorry, I can't. The career counselor me has to ask how you're feeling.
I think nervous. I think that it's a healthy nervous. Yeah. I think it'll help me perform at my peak. We do a lesson plan, and so I'm working on sort of catering around that. And and otherwise excited to learn more about not only the Teach for America program and the core that serves the program, but also the other applicants who are there. I think if nothing else, if the interview goes horribly, if nothing else, as a group interview, it's a networking opportunity.
There you go.
Like-minded individuals.
Great.
But I think that it will go really well, and I just believe that everything will work just fine.
Well, and we've had these very philosophical conversations over the couple of years that I've known you. We talk a lot about, you know, this idea things do work out, right? Mm-hmm. And so you put out your intention, and things work out the way they're supposed to, even if you don't know what that's supposed to looks like or understand why that is. So mm-hmm. I trust in that too. And we can talk more about your interview process, what questions you have with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. Do you like me to speak to that now?
Well, let's come back to that for a minute, because I want to talk a little bit about networking a little bit. Brian, you gave a great example of sort of some of the ways that networking has been important to you. I'm curious, Maren, when you think about networking, what comes to mind for you? What are some of the, you know, positives and negatives that come to mind to you?
I think that when I first heard the term networking, I really thought about it as being the business card, a bunch of people sort of standing around in their suits and purposefully really looking to meet people to work with. And that sounded really intimidating and possibly boring, and I was very freaked out about it. But I had realized sort of before hearing the term networking that I had already been doing networking, just building relationships and making those connections. Like you said, the communication aspect of interviews, that makes a lot of sense. And so I think that the positive sides are that it's not necessarily one way, that it's not necessarily one person always helps the other find jobs or positions or whatnot, and that it's mutual and that everyone can learn from each other, which is something that I more largely believe in. But I guess the drawback is that you are sort of always representing yourself. So even on your bad days, you might meet someone that could be your potential helping hand in the future. However, you know, if you're just yourself every day, then you're at face value, and you're going to be able to find people who want you to work in things that you'll do well in.
Yeah, there's something about being genuine, authentic in your daily actions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Marin, could you maybe say something, give an example maybe of a networking opportunity that you've participated in, mm-hmm. and maybe sort of walk through what it felt like for you? When did you know you were being successful? Mm-hmm. Things like that.
I would, again, have to pull out the outdoor school card. I think for me, that starting to view outdoor school as a stepping stone on the way to a larger career or a larger interest, and also just really liking the program and wanting to give back. I had done some sort of fundraising outside, volunteer work, and the person who works with them in their Friends of Outdoor School program has really helped me with a lot of connections in the nonprofit world. It was from there that I realized that, wow, people really do want to help you, and that it's all about getting the best people in the right jobs or volunteer positions or whatnot.
You talk about the outdoor school. When you were working with your mentors or the people that you work with at the outdoor school, did they approach you about making connections, or did you approach them?
It's somewhat of a two-way door between her and I, but for the most part, it was, I'm graduating soon from high school, and do you know what's a good place to look, and do you know if there's anything available? And she gave me some options and ideas that she had. But also, ever since expressing that original interest, I still get emails from her. And I've taken house-sitting opportunities, and I've taken things that are nowhere near education, but it's that it's we've created a relationship where it's people we know and trust. And so it's if they're interested in it, they'll be good at it, sort of a situation. So I've appreciated that reciprocal aspect in our networking relationship, for sure.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for, you know, I know Brian can probably speak to this too, but when someone asks you to introduce you to someone else, you do it with people you trust. You do it with people who you would say, you can take my word. This is someone that I think has talent. This is someone who I think has potential. And people really want to do that. And part of what we talk a lot with students about is this idea of informational interviewing, which it's not a complicated idea, but I think when I explain, people are like, oh, I've never heard of that. And if you say to someone, hey, I want an informational interview, they might say, I don't know what that is. but if you say to someone, hey, I really am interested in what you do, or how did you get to where you are, and you're genuinely, authentically curious about that, or, you know, Joan Smith gave me your name because she said you might be a good person to talk to. Oh, Joan gave you my name. Okay, that's someone that I'd be willing to talk to. A friend of Joan's is a friend of mine. This idea that people are going to be willing to open up their experience and share that with you. It really is very mutual in that vein. I always tell people, you know, I like that they use the word stepping stones, because I think we're often stepping from one experience to the other and trying to learn from that experience. And if you've made it to college, you've had stepping stones, and mm-hmm. there have been people along the way. It could be your traditional family, or it could be your created family, whether it's friends, whether it's coworkers, whether it's, you know, whether it is family who've helped you to get to where you are. And those same people want to help you beyond that. So I think that's really important. Brian, we're talking a little bit about what I call hot leads, people who know you really well.
Right, right.
What would you say about some of the more warmer, or what I call cold leads? You know, I call warm leads, you know, people who you maybe don't know, but you know someone, and cold leads, people you don't know, but you definitely need to know, because they're like the key people in your industry. Or, you know, can you talk about how you've done some of that in terms of not in terms of work, but in terms of your professional life?
Yeah, I think that the cold lead is probably the most intimidating kind of approach, because it's just, I mean, it's a lot like making a cold call, or, you know, there's just no obvious connection necessarily. But I think one good in is always the informational interview, right? Because it's always the opportunity to say, I want to know what you know, and I may want to be where you are someday, especially leaders in fields. And if there's and I think we've said this before, Minda, and I'm just going to keep saying it, people love to talk about themselves,
it's
right?
It's true.
And so if you give them the opportunity, they will talk your ear off.
Including the two of us.
Including the two of us. I don't, yeah. Yeah, I have that. We are absolutely included in that group. And so I think that that is one way. The other way that I found to be really useful is to join local networks of people. You know, you can find really inexpensive ways of joining associations and joining professional organizations, and leaders in your field are very often going to be very, very active in those organizations. For example, locally, here in Portland, we have WVDO, the Willamette Valley Development Officers. I can't remember exactly what the acronym stands for. It doesn't really matter. The point is that it's a group of fundraisers from every sector in Portland, and it focuses locally on fundraising issues. And it's an opportunity to get together and meet executive directors and development officers and board members, and everyone comes to these events. And some of them are social in nature, and some of them are informational in nature. And it's a point where it's a very even keel. It's a very even playing field across the board, because you have everyone across the spectrum in some of these organizations showing up to participate. And I think that joining those organizations is a really easy way to sort of get an in, because you can stop by and say hello at the end of one of the sessions, or you may ask someone you already know in the organization, would you introduce me to someone I haven't met
them yet? The introduction is a great tool.
Right. And get to know the people who are really active in the organizations, people who are on the board of, you know, I know a couple of people who are on the board of WVDO, and I know that if I asked them to help me meet someone, they would absolutely do that. And so I think that you may not have a direct connection to that person, but it's pretty easy, especially if they are someone in your field. You can find, you know, it's six degrees of Kevin Bacon. You're only so far away from any given person, yeah. Right? And so I think that you can find an in if you don't see it right away. So, yeah, I think that's what I would say about the cold lead is you can find your connection and the informational interview.
Well, and I think what you're saying about even this organization that you're a part of, my mind starts to work and say, when I'm doing an informational interview with Brian, I'm going to say, what other organizations are involved with that? Because I'm interested in nonprofits, and mm-hmm. he may not be a development officer for an educational nonprofit, but he might know some executive directors at an educational nonprofit that might be helpful to someone like Maren.
Right.
And so that's the first thing. And I think the other thing that I would also add to that is our alumni. They are what I would call sort of warm cold leads.
Oh, yeah.
You don't really know them necessarily. You might have met them at Careers for Pioneers or some other event on campus. But they're warm because they have a connection. They have an shared experience as you students have with them. So, for instance, you know, I always tell students, or actually Adonica, my associate director, uses this example, so I need to give credit where credit is due, that when she talks about networking, she talks about this idea that if someone from your high school, you know, where'd you go to high school?
Wilson High School.
Wilson High School. There you go. So if someone at Wilson High School called you and said, Maren, I'm thinking about Lewis and Clark. I'm thinking about being a psychology major. The guidance counselor gave me your name. Would you be willing to talk to me?
Of course.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
It would be a lot of fun even, you know, yeah. Because you'd be able to share your experience. Well, that same experience happens with alumni. And so I'll give two quick plugs. Obviously, you know, LCNet, which is a database of over 1,000 alums. And you can find it on our website, go.lclark.edu/3CE. And the Alumni Career Corps are two places where you can connect with alums. And even if those alums aren't specifically focused on what you want to do, just what I was saying to Brian, they know people who know people. They have partners. They have friends. They have classmates who are also alums who can help make those connections too. So those cold leads don't have to be so cold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually, the more that I think about it, the more that I would say that there's probably no such thing as a cold lead. Mm-hmm. It's just a warm lead you haven't warmed up to
right.
yet. You know,
right.
It's like there are no strangers; they're all just friends you haven't
space
met
eater.
Yet. Yeah, and I think that it does take a little bit of courage. I mean, it's not; it is can be intimidating, I think, to approach someone you don't know. But it, you know, if they aren't willing to make time for you, then they're not going to really be of help to you. So it's not worth your time trying to connect with someone who also is in the same turn not going to really be helpful in helping you remain connected to a field or to an organization or to an industry. And so there's, you know, don't be afraid of hearing no, I guess is the other thing.
And sometimes it has nothing to do with you. Absolutely. I think not even a personal thing. I get calls all the time and emails all the time. And sometimes it's just a question of you're buried because, you know, I have 100 emails and, you know, this isn't what I need to get done today. Right. So I think the other message is have a little persistence, you know, don't give up on the first try, ask again, you know, oftentimes, you know, especially if you're going into any kind of advocacy work, you know, it's not just sales and marketing that you need to be persistent. If you're going to work for, if you're going to be advocating for a nonprofit organization, you need to be able to advocate for yourself, which is a really important to think about because I think sometimes it's an intimidating to consider what do I, you know, how can I advocate for myself? Well, how can you advocate for others if you can't do it for yourself? Right. What have some of the challenges been for you, Maren, as you've gone through this process of making connections and going about building relationships?
I think that maintenance of those relationships is one of the more challenging things to do. Because especially since you don't know necessarily which leads are going to be the hottest leads or which leads are going to bring you where you actually end up wanting to be in the future, it's hard to remember sometimes to send a thank you note or just an email that sort of sums up what you talked about. But those can make all the difference, I've noticed. And I've definitely regretted leaving Careers for Pioneers and not following up or things like that, and then followed up later and found that there was still a connection there. It may have been lukewarm, but there was. I think maintaining that because it's just not something you think about every day.
And so, what have you created some strategies to do that, or do you need, or is that something you're still struggling with?
It's a matter of making like a rule of thumb for me is to always send a thank you note, even if it ends up being really formal. Usually people appreciate it and people don't get thank you notes all the time.
I'm going to interject here.
Brian's jumping.
I am a firm. So obviously I'm a fundraiser. There's a lot of follow-up that I have to do to make my job work.
Oh, yeah.
But I am a wholehearted believer in the handwritten note for anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will write my donors a note if, you know, if they had coffee with me one afternoon. And just to send them a thank you to say, you know, you're busy people, that you took an hour out of your day, that's meaningful to me, and I really appreciate that. And I mean that genuinely. It's not just because I think, oh, I need to do it. It's because, and it's about being authentic, I think, is the other thing, which is something to think about when we develop these strategies is that yes, it's a good strategy, but if it's not genuine, it's not authentic, it's worthless because it doesn't mean anything. And so that's the one thing that it's one caveat I would put on any strategy that you sort of come to is that really own it and be genuine about the practice of it, because I think that that's when it really does have a really deep impact. And you're totally right. People don't get thank you notes. It's really uncommon, and it's I think it's great. I'm just going to
Well, you know who's really, getting a thank you note tomorrow.
Yes, I'll be writing that right now. But
we're going to write it to you. Are you kidding?
And everyone will feel so much love
and
appreciate it. I definitely agree what you're saying about being authentic. And I remember starting off, it didn't feel authentic. Like I would say like, oh, I'm supposed to write a thank you note. Like last time I wrote thank you notes was my 7th grade birthday. And I sort of had to work on really just like being natural on the paper or sometimes it does come in emails for me.
And that's okay, too. It's totally legit. Some people prefer emails because it's more, it's speedier.
And I think that if anything, just sort of getting over that initial hump of sort of letting it flow and has made me realize that when I interact with people, I want to take in the moment. And something that I've been working towards in general in life is to just really appreciate the time now, because we're always looking at the future and how scary it is and how we need to like protect ourselves so that we're doing well in the future. And it's much easier to appreciate the now when I think about like, what do I like about this person? What do we share? And so now it comes naturally for me. And I feel like when I write someone a letter of thanks later, that I instantly have those like, it was really cool to hear about blah, blah, blah. And I was the one in the weird hat or whatever. And just to make those personal connections that make everything more real and tangible.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna jump in and second again, because I think you really, really hit the nail on the head in terms of what makes networking such a powerful tool for people. That real, genuine connection, that being in the moment, not mm-hmm. thinking about, oh, what is this person going to accomplish for me? Or how is this person going to be useful in my future? It's that, oh, we are connecting. This is genuine. We have some shared interest. I really like what you're saying. Or maybe I disagree with what you're saying, and now we can have this discussion. Those things, that's where networking really happens, right? And whether it's at a cocktail party in your suit with your business cards in hand, or whether it's just at your volunteer job, right, where you're spending some time with the paid staff, getting to know them better and having an exchange, that authenticity, that genuine connection you have with people makes all the difference. I mean, like the woman who helped me get my current job, who I took the shuttle with to Lewis and Clark every day, you know, I don't think we were really having an exchange where we felt like, oh, you're someone I'm going to want to know. It was more like, oh, we both really care about education and we both really see what fundraising does for education. And, you know, and we sort of just became really good friends as a result of it and really close colleagues. And those are the kinds of things that I think of when I think about networking. And I do want to talk to you a little bit more as we progress about sort of the kind of networking that feels less organic, that feels less natural, mm-hmm. because some of that is useful. But I just want to say you really hit the nail on the head, I think, in terms of what is powerful.
Well, and I'll just expand on that too. I mean, I think part of what this whole being present is I'm going to talk about it as a skill, but it is a skill to a certain extent, because it's about being authentic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to help you not just in terms of building those relationships, but when you interview tomorrow. Because part of an interviewing process, part of determining where you're going, is seeing if something's a good fit. And if you're not being genuine and authentic, someone doesn't know if you're a right fit, and you can't really know. I call it sort of the outer body interviewing, where you're like sort of, you can feel yourself hovering above yourself and you're thinking, what am I saying? We've all done it, you know, like you've been, and whether it's an interview or been in a moment in a conversation with someone where you're thinking about what you got to pick up at the grocery store, or letting out the dog, or the next meeting you have to go to, and not really being in this moment right here, being present with the person in front of you. People really feel that. Mm-hmm. And so they're also sort of gauging, you know, that relationship and how it could potentially grow, because sometimes you make a really great connection, sometimes you make an okay connection, but if you're really present, you have a sense of, okay, how where can this relationship grow? And I think the other thing that I want to expand on is, you know, I think those first steps are really important. I also think it's important to think about, how do you follow up a month, 2 months, 3 months? You know, we talked about, you know, the person you were saying, the person you connected with through the outdoor school, originally you were connecting through part-time jobs. That was originally what you were asking for help with, you know? And I think we recently had a conversation of, okay, well, I'm not really looking for that anymore, but I'm looking for this. So how do I go back to that person? And I think part of that is, you know, obviously the first step is making a thank you note and following up with that person. But even just creating some kind of system for tracking who you've talked to, how you know them. It's easier when it's one degree of separation. It's a little bit harder when it's Brian's friend who he connected you to through his, you know, professional organization. But, who you're connecting with, how you know them, something that maybe triggers, you know, oh, they were wearing a crazy hat when I met them, or I met them at Careers for Pioneers. And what you talked about, so that you can go back and say, you know, it was really helpful when we talked about this. Wanted to give you an update. Here's where I am now. And so, because you never know when it starts, there's sort of this, it's almost like a scales. When they start helping you, you know, shifting from when they start helping you to when you start potentially helping them, a job opportunity becomes available. They know someone who you'd be a really good fit for. You have a skill, a talent that they can use in their organization. And so having some kind of tracking device can be really helpful as your network grows. And I'm sure Brian can talk to this in terms of his work, because he probably has quite a few systems and might be more complex than our students need.
Yeah.
I know I could probably learn a few things.
We have whole software systems that help us manage our networking.
Yeah. Oh,
classy. Classy.
Yeah. So, you know, I think a simple spreadsheet, though, you know, Excel can be really easy, you know, name, how you know them, last time you talked to them. If you have any personal information, they have kids that are, you know, a certain age and, mm-hmm. you know, involved in sports, you know, they have pets, you know, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. It sort of becomes an opener. Because if you think it's difficult as a student approaching someone or anyone approach, it's also kind of can be awkward of like, what do they want? Are they, you know, can I be helpful? You know, people want to help and they want to be able to helpful to you, be helpful to you. So knowing how they can help. And I think part of it is what you're saying in the beginning. It's part of the reason I asked where you're going and what mm-hmm. you're doing. You having a clear idea. We talked about this last week, Brian, with Claire. Having a clear idea of what it is you're wanting allows someone to be helpful to you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I don't keep a spreadsheet. I'm going to now. But I tend to just use the social networking sort of trick. And yeah. so whether it's sort of finding out more about the business that they work with or actually friending them on Facebook mm-hmm. and sort of I try to keep my Facebook mostly professional and something that I wouldn't mind if anyone saw because I know that one day I might have someone be my friend who you know is going to be my future employer as well. But I'm realizing now the trick that my dentist has used for years when I only see him every 6 months and he'll still know like, oh, you went abroad to Australia and how was that trip? And it's because he keeps a spreadsheet.
Right.
I've seen him glance at it. Now I know what's going on.
Yeah.
He's not just checking tricky, your dental records.
Tricky, tricky. No, they do. They write little notes like mm-hmm. just as a reminder, you know, because it is hard to keep track of it. I mean, we have so much information we're managing. To figure out a way that works for you is so powerful.
Yeah, I really like that you brought up things like Facebook, because there's also things like LinkedIn. These are all websites that we're all pretty familiar with. If you're not, I think LinkedIn is a good one to become more familiar with because it is strictly professional. And so you can create a network of people who you don't have to worry about the photos you're tagged in or the stuff your friends leave on your wall or things like that. And I think that that's useful. And I've actually, it's been really fun for me lately, I've been seeing a lot of students graduating and starting to add me to LinkedIn, and I think that that's really good. But I've also found alumni that I worked with when I worked in admissions who are my volunteers now, who I'm reconnecting with and asking them, what are you doing now that we haven't seen each other in a few years? And I think that there's you talked about the maintenance issue earlier, mm-hmm. and things like LinkedIn can help you with some of that maintenance because you can just – it's, you know, you can sort of pop into your page and take a look.
Brian, it's a new job. Brian, congratulations on your new job.
Exactly. I just got an email about a friend who got a new job, and I was like, oh, I really want to just drop this person a quick note and say congratulations because it's great that they've gotten promoted. And so those kinds of things make the maintenance a whole lot easier.
Definitely. That sounds like the professional solution to the Facebook woes. For
sure. Facebook can be kind of tricky because I think, like Brian said, you don't have control what other people post on your Facebook.
Yes,
I know as a 39-year-old professional, I have some friends who post some things that I think, wow, I don't really want that on my page, you know? So I'm very cautious about that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably even more complicated as a younger professional. That you don't always know what someone is going to be talking about or posting. So,
You know, I think that it raises, I think, a really complicated issue. I don't think it's a complicated issue. I think it's a very simple issue, is that you do have to be vigilant about what you allow to be posted about you online. Mm-hmm. And Googling yourself every now and then is a very, very good idea.
It's a great idea, especially for people job searching.
If you don't think that your potential employer is not Googling you, you are dead wrong. I have never been involved in a search where we did not, at the end of an interview, go Google someone's name to be like, what don't we know that's going to come up?
Well, and I talk about this with students all the time, this idea, especially with Facebook. Google, too. I always tell students to Google themselves and see what the first thing that comes up. That's number one. And the best way to make something professional come up is create a LinkedIn account because it's usually one of the first things that comes up.
Yeah, good call.
But the other thing I would say about that, now, you know, you'll see a lot more people Googling you. But I think now that your generation is heading into the workforce, we're going to see more people searching on Facebook for mm-hmm. you, which is even going to be more dangerous because I don't think people my generation are necessarily doing Facebook searches. I think it's happening in some cases. And I talk to students all the time. I don't really take a stand whether it's right or wrong. It is.
Oh, yeah. It's
happening. It's public domain. It's public information. And I think it's sort of, you know, when I grew up, as my mother said, you don't know how the world is changing. I was just visiting family. And my mom said, you don't know how the world is changing. And she's playing Words with Friends on me on her iPhone. I've created a monster.
There was some finger wagging in that demonstration also.
Yeah, right. My mother. Love her to death. But, you know, and I said to her, I actually do because I work with students all the time. And they have never grown out. You've never grown out without technology where the internet was not non-existent when I graduated college. Or, you know, it just, you know, only, you know, Uber computer scientists were playing with it. It wasn't sort of the everyday person. And now information technology is always coming at us. And so being careful of that is important.
Definitely. I think all of this really speaks to having to be comfortable with who you are and sort of like picking characteristics that are true of you that you want to represent and really being consistent and sort of being that person that you want to be. And then that sort of like brings everything together, because then if you like who you are, then you're more than happy to talk about yourself and be honest about it. And people are going to want to connect with you. And so doing things like taking personality tests, and like, I'm not just saying this as a psych major, but it can be really helpful. So even if they don't map on perfectly, it'll still be just sort of some guidelines of things you want to get involved with if you are going a certain direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talk a lot about self-awareness. You know that we've had these conversations of knowing who you are, because that's, and are you projecting that out there? You know, so do I call it walking the talk?
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah. I love that you touched on consistency as sort of a key sort of principle, right? That you're consistent in how you show up in front of other people. That's a networking principle. That you're consistent in how you show up online so that you're not embarrassed by what people will find about you online. Like, that's... I had not really thought about it that way, and I think that's really interesting, and I think it's spot on with what we should be thinking about, is that we need to be consistent in who we are in both cases, because people won't separate the two. I would also just simply advise, when it comes to Facebook, lock down your security.
Oh, yeah.
If you searched for me on Facebook, you would not find me. And it's not because there's something on there that I'm especially embarrassed about. It's because I don't want to take the risk of someone finding something that I would be embarrassed by. Mm-hmm. There's stuff on there from when I was in college that I didn't have as much control over in terms of who was tagging, like, you know, who tagged me in what and who posted what. And it's just like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother trying to control all of this. I'm just going to make sure that no one can see this, because this is a really private forum for me,
right?
Unlike LinkedIn, which is, I feel like, much more public, and other online interfaces, which doesn't matter. But I like that idea, that consistency, I think, is really, it's cool. I like it. Yeah.
This is why Maren's on tonight.
Yeah.
It's just so brilliant.
So Maren, I do want to ask you, if you thought about maybe the things that did intimidate you about networking, what would be the things that you would probably highlight for folks that you would say, If you had to throw me into a room with a bunch of people and expect me to mingle, what are the first sort of things that would stop you?
I think uncertainty about where I'm going and what exactly it is that I want to do, because I recognize that it's important to have that self-awareness. There's sort of that insecurity there, and being hoping that when I'm in that room that people won't touch on those insecurities. And of course, everyone has them. And it's sort of just almost pointing out to them and sort of bonding over it. I know one of my best interviews that I had asked me, how do you organize your time? And so first I gave the answer that was true and that I thought they would want, which was I keep a planner and I check my emails all the time. And then I also was honest in the fact that I keep notes on my hand and that I walk around with little squiggles on my hands and kind of like a dirty third grader hand kind of thing. The interviewer pulled out her hand and had notes on it. And so it was sort of like, by pointing to that insecurity, it made our connection that much stronger. But nonetheless, that scares me to know that I have weaknesses and that people can find them easily. Also making that hard is just sort of knowing what I'm looking for at that time and trying to think of other connections for other people if they're coming to use me as a source when they're looking for a job or place to move or things like that. I hope that I have things that I can offer for them as well.
And I think, you know, especially when you go into a big room where you don't necessarily know people, it can be intimidating to approach people and to figure out, you know, where to start. And I would argue, you know, this goes back to sort of that more cold calling kind of thing, whether it's not being sure what to talk about, you know, how to connect or how you can help someone. Most people are intimidated by a room full of people. And so, you know, one of the easiest things to do is to find a small group and to approach it and to listen and to hear what they're talking about, to find an opportunity to see where you can offer some insight, some input. I also think another thing is sometimes not even thinking about going away from yourself in some ways of making sure you know what's going on in the news, you know, paying attention to what's happening in pop culture, that you don't want to get too much into pop culture. Less than you know, you can have a lot of fun with Charlie Sheen, but you really don't want to spend your whole networking time talking about him. You know, but thinking about what are some of the things that you can contribute just to a amicable conversation that breaks the ice, because it's kind of like dating. You know, the first person who just says, "Hi, how are you?" It's like, "Oh, thank God someone said something." You know, it's the same kind of idea in that banquet room where they're serving cocktails and, you know, small hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. Full disclosure, that feeling never really goes away.
No, it doesn't.
I still, you know, and I've networked with the best of them, and I still sometimes when I walk into a room, I'm just like, okay, it's time to sort of survey the landscape.
Yeah, so what are your tips? I have one. Take a buddy.
That's always a good
idea. Because you always have someone to talk to.
Yeah. That's usually when I enter a room is I look at the room and I ask myself.
But not five.
What's that?
But not five buddies.
Oh, no. You don't want to show up with a posse.
Right.
You don't need an entourage. But it's one of the things that I do is I look around the room and I ask myself, is there someone that I recognize? And first, is there anyone that I already know, right? Is there one person that I already know from somewhere else here? Or two, is there someone that I at least recognize from somewhere else who I can touch base with, right? And who can maybe help me
navigate? Didn't we meet at...
Right, exactly. And that has worked well. I've definitely been in a room where I saw one or two people and I thought, okay, I've met you once before. And I'll go up and reintroduce myself and say, and I know we've met somewhere before, but, I can't remember your name or I can't remember where we met. And then it sort of... things melt suddenly, right? And it's not, as soon as you connect with one person, things get better. You know, one of the common places where that happens, where, you know, the banquet room where they're serving cocktails is the conferences, right? You're at a conference and you are sort of ending the week and they always have some kind of reception. And the thing that I always try to do when I'm at conferences that way is try to connect with people at the sessions that you have been going to, so that at the end of that week you have one or two people who you can sort of say, oh, we met at the such and such session, and, you know, what did you think, and how was the rest of your conference? And there is, I think, and this I think is the hardest part for people, and I know only a handful of people who are really good at this, but the small talk is kind of important. And I think you do have to develop some comfort with small talk. And I know lots of grown adults, you know, twice my age, who still, you know, my boyfriend hates cocktail parties, and he hates networking events, and he will go to them sometimes and he'll do really well, but he is exhausted by them. And he has left me alone in the middle of more than one cocktail party where he's just come up to me and said, I'm done. Like, I am spent. I can't manage another conversation. And I'll be like, okay, that's fine. It's just because he knows his limits, and, you know, and it's totally fine. But he's admitted more than once that his problem is he can't always think of the next question, right? Is that he'll start a conversation with someone and it'll come to a point and he was not prepared to help keep it going. And that is hard.
And it's tiring. It is, especially if you're an introvert.
Yeah.
And so I do think thinking about what are some of those questions you want to ask. The other thing I would think about is having a business card. Not only to get a business card and make a note of what they're wearing, what they talked about, what you, you know, what's way you can reconnect with them, but also having a business card for yourself. This is something that an alum actually said to me at the Careers of Pioneers. She's like, you know, do you have a handout for students on making business cards? And we don't, I'll be honest, maybe down in the future, but even your name, you know, your major, what your interests are, and your email, your Twitter account, your LinkedIn account, any of those things. So someone can say, oh, someone's been thinking.
Yeah. There are plenty of websites where you can get a free business card made up.
Absolutely.
One of my best friends is graduating from her PhD program. And when she was in town, she was very proud of herself. And she gave away a bunch of her business cards that she had gotten for free online. And she was using them because she's graduating from her PhD. She's looking for a job. Mm-hmm. And she needs something to give to people. And I think that the business card, it's a good tool, right? Mm-hmm. And it can be a really good sort of way to end a conversation sometimes, mm-hmm. if it's time to move on to, you know, or if you've sort of exhausted or you're at a point that you're not going to move the conversation forward anymore in the given environment. It's a nice way to say, oh, it was really nice meeting you. Feel free to drop me a line sometime if, you know, if you're ever in my neighborhood or if you're ever in whatever city I happen to live in.
Or can I connect with you on LinkedIn?
Right. Absolutely. Those kinds of things that can help sort of round out a conversation. But I do, you know, I will touch once more on the small talk issue and in terms of sort of I do small talk for a living, and I recognize that. My whole job is to take people and to talk to them about their lives.
This is why I love to run into Brian at a networking event.
and there's an you develop an arsenal of questions that you always use.
So what are your top five arsenal questions?
I always ask if I don't know where they've gone to college, I always ask them where they went because one gives me some context for where they've come from. I'll ask them maybe why they chose that place. And what their experience was like. If they're very far away from that experience, I'll ask them to maybe reflect a little bit on it. If they're a little closer to
make them work.
Oh, I do. I do. No, but these are good questions because, one, they will talk for a long time. Especially when you get to some of these bigger questions, people will go on for a while. And so you're like, okay, now I can stop and think a little bit about what I want to know from them. If I get some good college information, if they've ever lived abroad, or if that's relevant to the context that we're in, if they've lived abroad, family questions, you know, do they have any kids? People love to talk about their kids. People love to talk about their kids
and their pets.
So I will always ask questions about their family or their pets. Not that those things are mutually exclusive, I'll ask them a little bit about what they do for a living. And that usually gets them talking a little bit. I always ask them if they like what they do for a living because that gives you some further context for where they are, right? Because if they're, an actuary and they're really unhappy, then you want to move away from that and maybe talk a little about, oh, well, what do you think you'd like to be doing next then, right? And try to set it up so that you're talking about what are they really passionate about. And eventually you get to a point where you're asking them, what do you really care about in life? And that's ultimately in small talk what I find to be most valuable is trying to get them from a point where we're just having chit chat to where I get to learn what do you really care about, and that's ultimately what my job is as a fundraiser, is to find out what are you passionate about, right? What's going to make ultimately what my question is, what's going to inspire you to give a major gift to an institution? It's the same thing in your networking, right? What's going to inspire us to connect? Like, do we have a common ground where we are going to be important to one another in a different context than this cocktail party?
Yeah, I really like what you were saying about how ultimately you want to get to that connection and find out what makes them tick, and just sort of like thinking about how that also the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon style, where there's always sort of a like a pearl in the oyster. Are they in oysters, clams?
Oysters,
yeah. There's always a pearl in there that you can find with everyone, and just like, you just have to do some shucking first, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Good nice metaphor, right? Nice little metaphor. That's nice. And I think the other piece is the curiosity. You know, it's the interest, the engagement. You know, avoiding politics. You know, mm-hmm. avoiding religion. Those kinds of things are important. So you don't sort of go down a path that sort of leads into a confrontation, unless that's the environment you're in. I mean, there are certain contexts where that might be important. So I'm curious, have you learned some things today to help you a little bit? Because We have about 5 more minutes, and I want to ask you what your questions are about your interview tomorrow.
Oh, excellent. I've definitely learned from today. I think being organized about it is sort of the overall picture of what I've been picking up. Sort of helping yourself out, like giving yourself a hand. There's no reason why you have to remember everyone in your head and force yourself to do that when you have Excel on your computer or whatnot.
Yeah, and think about all the people you already know, too. You know, mm-hmm. Start with those people you really, those hot leads, and work your way to the warm leads. You know, get comfortable with the people who you know and trust who are going to be gentle with you, you know, kick gloves and help you sort of learn your way around that process.
Definitely.
This is really great hearing about your successes networking. And I'm curious, you know, so you have an interview tomorrow for Teach for America or TFA, and that's exciting. We talked a little bit about the process. And what questions do you have about that we can maybe help you with as you think about preparing for that tomorrow?
Do you guys have any good sort of stall questions where you're trying to formulate a better question that you are actually concerned about, but first you need some time to think?
You know, this is a little quick phrase that I always throw in if I'm not quite sure how to answer. It's not really, it doesn't take up that much time, but it's sort of, it's something you can roll off your tongue. You're not, when somebody asks me something I don't know the answer to or I need time to think about it, first of all, it's perfectly fine to take a breath before you answer a question. And I encourage you to breathe, because oftentimes, I know that seems like, I've said this before, it seems very silly, but most of us hold our breath when we're stressed out. And so before you even go into an interview, take 5 deep yoga breaths. And that's, for me, a yoga breath is in 5 breaths, out 5, inhale, exhale 5 seconds each way, mm-hmm. and do 5 of them. It'll clear your head and make you feel focused and centered and present, which, as I mentioned before, I think is probably the most important thing. And so you can be back to yourself. So it's okay to take maybe not 5 yoga breaths. That might freak them out a little bit. But I, you know, to take a breath. And, yeah. And usually I'll take a breath and say, that's a great question. I have to think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. And take a second, 5 seconds, and think about it. And say, you know, and then you can launch into your answer. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good tool to say, you know, I'm being thoughtful. I don't want to give you just some BS answer, but I mm-hmm. really want to give you something that I know the response to, or I know how I would answer that. And being cognizant that it might be a really difficult question.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And that might take a minute to answer. Does that help with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Wait, are you thinking about questions that they might ask you of what questions do you have for us?
Well, I feel, yeah. There's definitely a section where they say, ask us questions. And having done a lot of research since it's something I've seriously made an investment in at this point, I'm sort of running low on questions. And I hopefully more will pop up in the moment, but take time.
Yeah, the other thing that I would say is it's okay to ask similar questions to different people, because you're going to get a different response.
Nice. True.
So don't feel like if you've asked in your first interview a question, now you don't want to ask the same exact question, but you might want to ask something that's more specific to someone else. So for instance, one of the questions you might ask that I'm sure you've already asked is, what are some of the challenges of being a TFA volunteer, right?
Right.
I'm guessing you've asked that a couple of times. But you might want to personalize that. Minda, what's been one of the challenges you've faced?
Yeah.
In being a TFA, I've asked this question before. I'm trying to get different people's perspectives mm-hmm. on what that experience has been like for them.
Yeah, I like that. That's really genuine and personable.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And so thinking about what are some of those questions that can be reframed for a different audience? Always questions about where you see the future of this program. Where do you see your role in this organization mm-hmm. in the future? Again, it gets more genuine. Other thoughts, Brian, that I'm...
I was trying to think. I'm definitely a big fan of the, if you don't have an answer, take the minute and breathe. And obviously, and you know this, I don't think, but it bears repeating. You should always be prepared with a list of questions at an interview. Mm-hmm. And even if it's 5 questions that you reuse, you know, in consecutive sessions, you should always have five questions. That's not five necessarily, but you always should have some questions at the ready to say.
Yeah, you don't need to ask five questions, but have five questions ready.
Right. Have a list that you're prepared to go with. And I think Minda's right. Personalizing them, reusing questions is perfectly okay because you're going to be talking to different people at every stage.
Google the organization in the news. Mm-hmm. I noticed
good idea.
There's a lot going on around education.
Yeah, definitely. Funding issues there. So the topic,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I'm hearing our music, and I'm also hearing the next DJ coming in. any final thoughts before we head out?
I was trying to think about networking more broadly recently, and I decided that even though it can feel like you're sort of trapped in the webbing, that really think about it as like a webbing of support. And like the more you spread out, like the more sturdy you are.
Almost like a trapeze artist on the high wire.
Yes, I'm often thinking about trapeze artists.
Well, beautiful. We are so glad you joined us tonight. Brian, as always, it's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
And Maren, we know you're going to do great tomorrow, and we can't wait to hear about how your interview goes. And thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was fun and very informative.
Great. For those out there, you can listen to us on WebDisc. You can download it from the 3CE website at go.lclark.edu/3CE. It rolled off the tongue a little bit better this time. And we will see you, I believe, on the 31st of March is our next show. If you have questions, we encourage you to come into Albany to see us and to schedule an appointment. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.